It's time for another edition of What's Going On Out There, Ruth, with Ruth Epstein, Robinhood Radio's roving reporter, various places. What's going on out there, Ruth?
Good morning.
Or afternoon. Or who was that? Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I think that was the Truman Show. I'm not positive. I'll have to check.
I don't know. Housing again was front and center this week. On Saturday, the Cornwall Housing Corporation held what they called a community visionary program. They have a 12-acre piece on Route 7 south of Cornwall Bridge that was a factory site years ago. It was determined to be contaminated and a brownfield, and it was cleaned up many years ago. And now the property was in foreclosure because of non-payment of taxes. So the town got it last year, 12.38 acres. There was a tax sale. David Berto, who is a housing consultant in the area, bought it, and he is now giving the Cornwall Housing Corporation, which is an affordable housing group, an option to purchase this. So,
Sorry, because this is my usual ignorance, but which Cornwall? All Cornwall?
West Cornwall on Route
7.
West
Cornwall?
Yep, Route 7, if you know where the dairy farm is, Clover and something, dairy farm on Route 7, it's just north of that. It's along Route 7, and it also backs up all the way down to the river. And so the corporation decided to hold a site visit and this program on Saturday. The site visit got canceled because of ice. Everything is a sheet of ice, of course. But the library was packed. People came. It was standing room only, practically. There was a presentation. They showed the property in a video, and then the corporation gave a program. The participants were separated into several groups and asked. They had maps, and they were asked to put on how they thought the site should be developed. And so there were all kinds of designs and proposals, and it was a very lively session. And we'll see what happens. In the meantime, COG has gotten a $200,000 grant for the corporation to do another assessment to see if there are more contaminants on the property. How far down? And
That's the Northwest Corner Council of Governments you're speaking
of? Northwest Hills Council of Governments,
Okay. Yes. Sometimes we need to clarify these acronyms.
Yes, you're right.
Too many of them.
Those of us who know them all the time.
That's right.
Slips off the tongue, but for reasons.
For the ones who don't, the rest of us, it's also trying to figure out where the actual parcels are. So it now needs to be restudied? The contamination aspect needs to be restudied?
Yeah, yes. They received this grant, and while there was cleanup, and they felt that, I guess they feel, before you think of any housing, putting in wells or anything like that, and it would be a public sewer and water system. They're talking maybe 24 units, so you'd have to have their own public system. You'd have to make sure there are no contaminants in the soil.
Any idea how much wetlands is there?
There are some. As I said, they showed a map. It was pretty detailed. Wetlands, forests. I mean, it's got everything. Shore, on the river.
Now, with these ones, if I recall correctly, this works like the Salisbury Housing Trust, where they sell the houses to the people but maintain the land.
Yeah.
That's
here
model.
Again. Excuse me. It's in such preliminary stages. They talk basically, somebody said maybe you could do some housing ownership in it, but I think the corporation is leaning toward rentals. Yeah. And it would be that the corporation retains the land and the residents rent their houses. Well, actually, I guess the corporation retains everything.
Well, yeah, in that case, yeah.
Yeah,
I know
rental.
The Salisbury Housing Trust, they maintain, keep the land, and you only buy the house.
Yeah.
So,
well,
and
Salisbury
I
is so unique because you have a trust and you have...
Right, you have the land trust
and the, you know, the everything else there. Three different entities.
You've got three, maybe even four, I think. But
there's
plenty of people trying to build affordable housing in Salisbury. Let's put it that way. So,
yeah, well,
but we're looking at this model. I'm curious because when you build out these developments with sewer, I'm going to assume I know roughly where it's at. There's no town company operated water or sewer supply out there, so they're going to have to create their own sewer district and water district.
Right.
Okay.
Right. The way they were talking in Falls Village for the River Road.
Yeah.
Same thing. And actually, there's no public sewer water anywhere in Cornwall.
Oh, really? Well, yeah. You know, when I think about it, that, kind of makes sense because where is the center of Cornwall?
Yeah. Well, you know, they're working on this wastewater project for years now. They've been. I don't know how close they're getting now to having it in West Cornwall. They received, you know, huge grants, and there were all kinds of engineering studies and design studies, and yet that still hasn't come to fruition yet.
That gets into the mega millions.
Yeah.
Easily.
Oh, yes. No, and so we'll see.
Yep.
But, and so... At this point, it's just a wait and see on this project after the contamination assessment is done. We'll see what happens. But in doing that story, I came upon other figures. You know, all these towns are grappling with ways to promote affordable housing, and including loosening the regulations. Now, in Cornwall, you have 3 to 5 acre zoning. And so, you know, that really hinders that. And so the selectmen have written a letter to Planning and Zoning asking that they look at revising the regulations to ease off those numbers.
Well, that gets very complicated because you may be looking at overlay districts. And frankly, developers and average people are probably not going to go for the 3 to 5 acre zones being granted any kind of housing density. That's my guess.
Right.
Yes, because theoretically, this is all supposed to happen. I know there's a lot of different factors. Theoretically, this is all supposed to happen where it's built, where there's public water and sewer, and they're close to the kind of facilities, stores, and stuff they need. But meeting that requirement up here in the corner is extremely difficult.
Can't do it.
Well,
Village found that out. You know, they were screaming and yelling, put it down in the center of village. Well, there's nothing in the center of village.
Yeah, no,
people still have to drive.
They still have to drive X to E. I know this.
Yeah.
Of course, so, Sharon has where the community center is that they're going to redo. They have that's pretty much the perfect site right there.
There's access,
and you know you can live there. You can go to school.
You got a grocery. You got all the things. Basically, everything you need is right there. That's the perfect location.
Right, and that's an anomaly because that is not.
If you don't mind me butting in here. People should actually look at that because, you know, one of the, when I came up here ages and ages ago, it was the spread out nature of the different towns that was kind of interesting. But if you just, I don't know, I get calls, random calls, you know, oh, we'd like to buy the property at such and such. And it's like, have you looked? So I sometimes wonder if the people who, not the local people who are attempting to do this, but the larger developer types have looked. So that, like, yeah, but you need a grocery store. Yeah, but I know there's a school there, but where's the food?
Well, yeah, no, but that's just what we've been saying. It's very hard to find that perfect criteria in this area. Does Kent have any affordable down in their village?
Oh, yes.
They do. Okay, so, well, that's another one that's that meets the criteria,
yes,
I think.
Yes, we do. We have South Common, 24 units, and we have Stewart Farm, another 10 units, right down, walkable.
That works. Now, Salisbury, the property that Dresser has given the whichever trust it was, mm-hmm. is kind of in an ideal situation once again.
Right.
And
as
the
Grove
Pope,
Street.
The Pope property. Grove Street, not so much, because in honesty, the grocery store you may be referring to is a convenience store, and they're not exactly price conscious over there.
Wait. No, Grove Street is...
Oh, gross. I'm sorry, in Salisbury. You know what?
Yeah.
I flipped over to the old laundry in Lakeville.
Oh,
I went to,
okay.
My mind went to Perry Street.
Perry
when you
Street.
Said,
no, Grove Street is okay.
Yeah,
that
okay.
they can walk.
I got lost.
But the one other factor in all this is that the state is requiring, passed a law in 1989, requiring towns to have 10% of its housing stock affordable.
No
town in this region has reached that, and it gives developers a pass on a lot of zoning regulations.
Well, yeah, and that's not required either. That is suggested. That is not written in stone that you have to do it.
Well,
they
it's
never
a law.
Put that. They never put the teeth in it. Yeah, but the law doesn't have the teeth that says you must.
Oh.
Because by now, as long as the law's been there, then we should have affordable housing everywhere if there was really teeth in it.
Yeah, well.
And in reality, up in this area, to get a private developer to give up part of market property values for affordable housing, it's not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
Nope. No. What else is going on?
In Kent, we've lost Maureen Brady. Maureen passed away Sunday on... She was the first selectman in Kent back in, she was elected back in 1985, served for many years. That was an era when there was articles going around about the town run by women, because everybody in town hall and in the post office and everywhere else was a woman, and so the National Enquirer came along and wrote the story because of the first woman.
The divine feminine. Good job. I said the divine feminine. Good job. You guys
yes.
are cutting edge.
Yep. But Maureen died Sunday, and funeral will be held this Friday, and I'm sure there will be quite a turnout. As a matter of fact, last year, a room was named in her honor because she oversaw the building of the new town hall at that time. We have the Sharon Center School reunion put on by two beloved teachers, Irv Robbins and Jack Comparisi. They were there back in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s, and they were beloved teachers. The kids loved them, and they loved the kids. And Irv Robbins has been around the country visiting former students, and there's a great bond there. And so they've decided they want to get all these kids, quote, together. And so they're having this reunion at the school from 11 to 4 on Saturday, and they're hoping for a large turnout. So anybody out there who went to Sharon Center School or their kids or grandkids or whomever who knew Irv and Jack are asked to come. And they're hoping, as they say, for a large turnout.
Does that include staff and everybody else, too?
Everybody, yep.
Wow.
And Saturday is the first, correct?
Saturday is the first, yeah.
Is it the first already? Oh, my God.
Yes, first of March.
They
had the art show at the Kent Art Show student show, the Kent Art Association student show. They had the judging of awards on Saturday. Carl Chayette from Sharon and Mike Spross from Millbrook were the judges. They were two former art teachers, and these are works put on by done by high school kids. And believe me, their talent was unbelievable. The things that these young people created. The best in show went to a young 14-year-old gal from Frederick Gunn School. She did four little Chinese pottery pieces designed from the ancient China. The prize from Housatonic went to Alex Wilbur, who did a self-portrait, and kids from Marvelwood, Foreman, South Kent, and Millbrook all had entries in there. It's always inspiring to see how creative the young people are, and this is a great venue for them to see things.
What happens to all their goodies afterward? Do they take them home, or do they go on display?
Yep.
No
yep.
display? Okay.
Yep. Okay, and looking ahead, Wednesday, tomorrow, is a Sharon Board of Selectmen special meeting at 5:30, and Selectman Kircher, Lynn Kircher, is going to unveil the latest study at Mudge Pond. They've done these studies. You know, they're looking to make sure that there's no hydrilla, and we'll see what that study reveals. As you know, everybody's concerned because of what's happened in Twin Lakes, this virulent weed, I guess.
Yeah, well, you got to be careful about who you launch in these places.
Yeah.
A lot of scrutiny. This has happened before. These things are spread by dirty boats, essentially.
Well, that's...
Or not well-cleaned boats, let's
right.
put it that way.
And they've in Salisbury, they've made, you know, put barriers in so you can't put your boat in the water.
Yeah,
and,
yeah, so you have to.
It's complicated. I hate to sound like my father, but it's complicated because, you know, it's like spreading a spore.
Oh yeah, no, it is.
People don't realize how complicated the you know it's all very well to talk about it, but like one little spore will do it.
Yeah, and usually the ones that are the invasives, as they're very hardy and can grow just about anywhere.
Because
so
otherwise they wouldn't be invasive.
It doesn't. Yeah, right. Okay, I was clarifying. Okay.
No, you're absolutely right. But the other thing is, you know, you have to separate people who don't know.
Yeah.
Who don't know that you shouldn't put an invasive in your mulch heap, right? Because you pull it up.
Yeah, that's another one, too. I didn't think about that. Yeah, there's so many ways.
It's like you've got so many levels of awareness.
I didn't think either the wildlife can bring it in, too. So
yeah.
I guess it's as you start thinking it through, suddenly you realize, oh, my God, there's 100 different ways this can happen.
Yeah, that's called air. This is my favorite GMO argument, but that's another story for another day.
That's right.
Well, we've dealt with so many, you know, in the... Lakewood.
Does anybody, and I haven't seen, maybe there, does anyone know how to get rid of this, or is it just
no,
there to stay?
No, this is, you know, once it gets in, it's almost impossible to get it out from what
oh.
I'm hearing.
I
don't know, but what's the one in the Lakeville that they've always, the lake
mil-
there?
The milfoil, yeah.
Milfoil, yeah, that they're constantly working on.
Yeah, that's all they do. They just constantly basically mow it and pull it out of there, and it's a never-ending war.
Yeah, and then these new ones crop up. I mean, who?
Yeah.
Hydrilla was not heard of years
that
ago.
With tick-borne disease, you know, tick-borne diseases, for example. These are hardy individuals that mutate. You know, that's how it is that they've been around this long.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's nature. I mean, that's what it's supposed to do.
It is. And it's nature, too, that we are running out of time this morning.
Mm-hmm. Does that mean that it's nature that I have to say something, or does Ruth have another minute?
It certainly means that we've discussed a lot of good topics, and now it's time for you to tactfully take us out of here.
Thank Ruth.
There you go.
For providing us with another edition of What's Going On Out There, Ruth, with Ruth Epstein of Robin Hood Radio's wandering, roving reporter.
I liked wandering. We can see.
I wander, I rove, whatever.